Madame Tussauds and the French Revolution, aftermath of the necklace scandal. Now, Marie Antoinette was much distressed and angered at Cardinal Rohan's acquittal. "Come weep with me and console your friend. Come to me, dear heart," she wrote to a woman closest to her, of course, the Duchess de Polignac. At the same time, the Queen was glad that the affair of the diamond necklace was, as she believed, over and done with. She could now get on with putting the finishing touches on her new diversion, her Hameau, her Hamlet, which was located in the park at Versailles, not far from the Petit Trianon, and on which work was now virtually completed. The Hamlet was a miniature farm, with rustic buildings, including a cowshed, a dairy, and a little house where Marie Antoinette, now advanced in her fourth pregnancy, could repose and drink milk freshly drawn from her own cows. For sojourns at the Hamlet, the Queen and her ladies dressed in expensively simple cotton and muslin milkmaid dresses. They escaped into a fantasy rural life, learning to milk scrubbed and docile cows into porcelain buckets embossed with flowers and the Queen's cipher. They herded spotless, combed, and ribboned sheep and collected eggs laid by pretty hens. A farmer and his wife, helped by a considerable staff, took care of this establishment where Marie Antoinette delighted to picnic in rustic simplicity. Now, Marie Grosholtz sometimes had to visit the Hamlet with Madame Elizabeth. The princess was charmed by the place, but Marie had little use for this folly. City bred and trained to work hard, she felt no enthusiasm for bucolic frolics. Moreover, the miniature farm was expensive to maintain, and Marie was well aware of the public talk that the Queen had overspent her dress budget by more than 150,000 livres. In spite of their simplicity, the milkmaid outfits cost a considerable sum of money, and even more costly were the enormous bonnets designed and made by, of course, Rose Bertin that topped them. People scoffed that this headgear was more suitable for hanging outside a milliner's shop than decorating the heads of the Queen and the court ladies. Marie Antoinette deluded herself when she believed that the acquittal of Cardinal Rohan was the end of the diamond necklace affair and the ensuing scandal. The Parliament may have found him not guilty and given him back his full liberty, but the King punished him. Louis XVI, deeply upset over the business, vented his anger by dismissing Cardinal Rohan from his post as the Grand Almoner of France, ordering him to retire and lead a reclusive life at the Abbey de Chaise-Dieu. This unprecedented disgrace aroused a storm. The powerful Rohan family was furious. Countess de Marsan, former governess of the Children of France, even went so far as to prostrate herself in public at the Queen's feet to plead for her nephew. She received a cold, negative rejoinder. The people of Paris, who had hailed the Cardinal's release, were also angered at his dismissal and the banishment to a remote abbey. The King also took action against the charlatan alchemist, Cagliostro. He had been accused by Madame de Lamont of instigating the death of the necklace. He too had been cleared and released. He was a well-known and popular figure, even if probably a rogue. He was ordered by the King to leave France immediately, bag, baggage, and wife. There was not much popular goodwill when Marie Antoinette gave birth to her fourth child, Princess Sophie, in spite of the usual free distribution of wine from the fountains of Paris. Then a crisis broke. Calonne, the latest minister appointed by the King to try and put some order into the country's finances, suddenly gave up the useless struggle. He threw open his accounts to the princes of the blood, the nobility, the aristocracy, and the magistrates of Paris, and provincial parliaments. Now all of France knew what the royal family, the court, and the 15,000 or so retainers serving them at Versailles were costing those who toiled and staggered under the burden of taxation. The deficit was enormous, the treasury bankrupt, and as Marie was to recall in her memoirs, the peasantry were in the last stages of deprivation and misery due to taxes and poor harvests. The fury of the people was concentrated on the Queen. They dismissed other factors, such as the huge cost to France of the American War, in which she had participated regardless of the depleted treasury. Marie Antoinette was also blamed for all. A magistrate called Tourelle voiced the hatred that boiled up against the Austrian woman who had squandered the finances of France provided by the toil of the people on her irregular pleasures. Someone coined the nickname Madame Deficit. a nickname that stuck and was bandied about all the streets all over France. Henceforward, the queen would be, in the eyes of her subjects, the main, if not sole, source of France's evil. In this atmosphere of disaster, Curtius took the decision to move his Salon de Cire out of the Palais Royal and install it in the spacious premises he already owned, number 20, Boulevard de Temple. The Chamber of Criminals, the Cavern of the Grand Voleurs, had been in this location for 3 years and was bringing in excellent takings. There were plenty of other rooms to accommodate his prestigious salon as a separate exhibition. He was influenced by the fact that the character of the Palais Royal Gardens had gradually changed. Now, as well as being increasingly the haunt for prostitutes and con men, they had become a speaker's corner. Where once quiet groups of men had sat beneath trees discussing the news, and fashionable ladies had promenaded and chatted, now frenzied orators climbed on boxes and tables and harangued audiences on liberty and the appalling state of the poor. Curtius himself had prospered, with his collection of wax portrait figures attracting plenty of interested visitors, but he was all too well aware of the current political atmosphere. His old medical friend, Marat, for example, had abandoned his appointment as a physician to the Comte d'Artois, personal guard, and devoting his furious energies to pamphlet writing and launching of his anti-royalist newspaper, L'Ami de Peuple, the People's Friend. Marat frequently had to go into hiding to escape arrest, several times concealing himself in Curtius's apartments, and even on occasion taking refuge in the sewers. Marie always knew uneasily when he was hiding with her uncle. Pleasure seekers from all walks of life were turning their backs on the Palais Royal and making their way to the entertainments offered along the tree-lined Boulevard de Temple. Curtius's large house there was easily accessible to his dinner-table cronies, who still included the anti-royal Duke d'Orléans and the General Lafayette, whose experience in the American War had both stimulated and made more practical his ideals of freedom. Curtius now owned the second house that was in the vicinity. In 1785, he had acquired a plot of land on the Rue des Fossés de Temple, for which he was paying by installments. He built a house on it, not for his own use, but to rent as additional source of income, and it was already rented and bringing in a good return. Curtius's move proved very successful. The prevailing climate of crisis did not prevent large numbers of people seeking amusement, and his always up-to-date collection of wax figures, whether depicting the great or the criminal, was more popular than ever. There were always enough people with money to spend on diversions in the Boulevard de Temple, even if the nation's finances were in disastrous disarray. Now, the sources for this, Madame Tussaud, A Life in Wax by Berridge, Madame Tussaud, Her Life and Legacy by Walton, Waxing Methodical, Life and Legend of Madame Tussaud by Berridge, and The French Revolution as Seen Through the Eyes of Madame Tussaud by Chapman. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.